This is the AFL Show, part of the Mojo Sports Network.
Well, everyone, welcome to AFL Show, Mojo Sports Network. It is your host, Maggie O'Connell, and I'm actually up in Hamilton Island at the moment bringing the podcast to you. It's very nice weather here at the moment, and I can't escape the footy. Can't escape it. So I'm joined by Yuri and Alan. Nice to have you back on the podcast, guys.
Great to be back on, Maggie, and should be a very exciting round coming up as well, starting tomorrow night. And what better way to start, right? Brisbane Collingwood, both teams that need a win on the board.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, really looking forward to that game. So good to be back.
Perfect. All right, let's start with our reviews. So I'll start with St Kilda Collingwood. I mean, what a game that was. I feel like the Saints were just way too quick for the Pies, especially I feel like with Wanganeen Miller, he's incredible. I feel like his drive off halfback, I think he racked up around 32 disposals with 25 kicks, can you believe, going at 81%. So that's just incredible. I thought he just carved up the Pies. And having guys like Higgins and King as well running through the forward line, they kicked seven between them. So I know Higgins maybe was out of bounds, I don't know. But yeah, I feel like the Saints just didn't allow the Pies to go inside the corridor, because I feel like Dacos and Dugowie definitely love going through the guts. So I feel like St Kilda definitely shut that down. So, Alan, what do you have to say about St Kilda Collingwood?
Yeah, I mean, going to this, I was looking forward to seeing St Kilda on the bigger ground and to see that ball move from the half back line. And you could just see with Wanganeen Miller, he just tore it apart. Their drive, I think Liam Henry's game too was great in that forward line. Unfortunately, you got injured towards the end, but just good to see St Kilda. That ball movement plan that Ross, the boss, has going is actually electric. And I think, and going in, I had them as my potential for the top four, and it just sort of solidifies that fact. Because I think that ball movement, but they do rely heavily on sort of Jack Steele in that midfield to be that sort of extractor. And his game was huge too. But the one I was quite impressed with, though, was Mitch Owens, his sort of second ruck. His ability to be so that outlet kick on the wings, etc., where they just, he's actually a big body that they just couldn't curtail. He was able to win that contested ball. He's enormous last year for his one-on-one contested possessions. And his ability to that just get that ball, get it to those running players on the outside, and they were just too quick and slick for the Pies. So it was quite an impressive win from St Kilda.
Don't normally tend to associate St Kilda teams under Ross Lyon as being quick and putting speed on the ball, but you normally see them as being this real dour, slog it out team and hold teams to under 10 goals a game and themselves only kicking 10 goals as well. But what they were able to do after what Collingwood got that early goal in the first 2 minutes through Jamie Elliott, and then it was pretty much just on St Kilda's terms, even though the Magpies were able to whittle the margin back late in that first half too. I think Patrick Lipinski kicked a couple of goals there and felt as though Collingwood were wrestling the game back on their terms. But it was the simple unforced errors that just hurt them again at the most inconvenient times. Darcy Moore playing on by hand when he should have just maybe waited a couple of seconds and found a target, say, from the other left half-back flank, say, probably further 30 metres. He ends up handballing and goes straight to, I think it was Jack Higgins, if I'm not mistaken, as well. It ends up being a St Kilda goal. It was just those real basic skill errors, which is unlike Collingwood, which really hurt them. And then, of course, that run on the outside, it just felt as though the Pies were just almost on second legs in a way too. They just couldn't yank out of it and just get the game back on their terms. And I think it was in that first quarter there was that brilliant transfer play the Saints had through the middle of the ground, and it ended up being a St Kilda free kick and a goal to Jack Higgins because Billy Frampton was completely stuck in no man's land. And is that really Frampton's fault? No, not really, because of how discombobulated Collingwood's backline structure was on that turnover. And it just really goes to show, right, when you can punish teams through the most basic of errors and catch them on the back foot, then you'll score more than what they will. And that was really evident right throughout the game. And it's a lot of question marks once more. And I wrote a piece on about Collingwood as well. And it's more in the fact that it's their structure, which is absolutely sort of butchering them at this stage. And whether that changes or not tomorrow night against the Brisbane Lions up at the Gabba for that Easter Thursday clash, we'll yet to find out with that. But it's, I think some of the commentary after the game too as well with Scott Pendlebury wasn't really warranted. That's all. And I feel as though that's a pretty harsh outlay of criticism, which wasn't really needed in that regard too, because how many times have you seen throughout Scott Pendlebury's career that he doesn't try? It's 0%. in every game since he debuted all the way back in 2006. It didn't really add up one bit. But it's Collingwood, though, and he feels though they can get it back on the right course, but it has to start tomorrow night, and otherwise 0-4, unless you're North Melbourne back in, 1975 somehow and come back and win.
I think initially with Frampton coming back, Pies looked actually almost stable in the back line because they had a couple of intercept marks, especially on the half forward line where he was able to intercept and catch and trap St Kilda in their forward line. But it's sort of they broke down. I think with sort of efforts, I think I look at the goey. Sometimes he wasn't quite chasing too much, and there was actually some really good footage that David King showed today on the AFL 360 where they were pretty much just putting Ross or in a loose St Kilda mid to him to cover any of the midfield ball where Dugowie able to sort of go and extract and really run and drive into the forward 50. And they were just sort of holding. It wasn't like a tag or anything. They were just holding sort of 5 metres away, stopping from that space. And that was preventing then Collingwood to get that loose ball, get that run and drive. And all of a sudden they're just kicking long and they're just turning the ball over to Wilkie, etc. And they were just, it's almost like that bit of game plan that Collingwood's had is now gone. And the teams have sort of worked that out. So it'll be interesting to see what they can do this week against Brisbane.
Moving on to Geelong and Adelaide. Now, I got my tips wrong. I did tip Adelaide. I feel like everyone did, but I feel like efficiency was the key for the Cats. The Crows did have more disposals, the contested possession, clearances, and inside 50s. Yet the Cats always, look the winner. So the Crows, I feel like they contained guys like Stewart up back and who took 10 intercept marks as well. So that was a huge favour. So, Yuri, what do you have to say about Geelong, Adelaide?
Yeah, just unfortunately for Adelaide, Maggie, that's been a pretty big issue. And we spoke about Melbourne a couple of episodes ago, right, and how for those seasons they got their number of inside 50 supply entries over 50 a game, but they just couldn't execute going forward and hitting the basic targets. Well, that was Adelaide's problem on Friday night. They just kept kicking it straight down Tom Stewart's throat. And even last season when Carlton played Collingwood in round 10 and Darcy Moore had a field day taking those 10 intercept marks and him and Steele's side bottom. And I'm pretty sure Steele was asked about that particular question on Darcy Moore's intercept marking. And he just basically laughed at the sight of it. But this is the thing, though, for Adelaide. Of course, they had Tex Walker back and he played his part. But it's more in the inside midfielder's role is how much damage on the outside can Matt Crouch, and also... Yeah, just with the other midfielders in there too. And whether they do throw, I'd say, I was thinking about this as well probably 24 hours ago with Ben Keys and whether they throw him into the midfield against Fremantle this Friday and play a tagging role on either Caleb Sarong or Andy Brayshaw, because it's something they have up their sleeve, Adelaide, in terms of playing Keys anyway as a defensive forward, also defensive midfielder for this Friday's clash. It's something just to watch out for. But I think if you're Adelaide too, is that execution going forward against Fremantle is pretty... rock solid defense, that's going to be really key for them and not bombing it straight down Alex Pierce's throat or where, as well, Luke Ryan, who just loved to take intercept marks. And now is Adelaide's downfall on Friday. And you felt as though after that first quarter, right, where Geelong got out to a 3-goal lead and Adelaide pegged them back, for some reason, it just didn't feel as though the Crows were going to career away. That was the strange part to it all. And Geelong through, of course, the skipper Patrick Dangerfield was influential, and so many of their other midfielders had big games. Max Holmes was pretty solid for them as well too. And yeah, it's just, I think for Adelaide, they're sort of still probably coming to terms as well, this whole expectation part as well in making finals after sort of what's it been the last 4 years of rebuilding.
Yeah, I mean, their expectation-wise this year is to make finals. And going in last year, they had probably the best forward line, in my opinion, in terms of ball movement getting in. Their scoring options were great. But the game on the weekend, it was almost like they just went away from it. They just started playing this slow, methodical, boundary-focused football where they were just taking short kick up to the halfway. Then they're like, oh, now we lost because Geelong's defensive structure is so great, especially on the sort of narrow grounds. And then just kicked it long to Stewart. And he was pretty much one out with no one anywhere near him. And they're just kicking it to him. And then there was just no dare through the middle. And they'll extract it out, go back, slow again, out wide. They could lock it in, get their inside 50s, but they weren't good inside 50s. And on the flip side, you touched on it. The efficiency of Geelong, especially through Brian Myers, who had an unbelievable game, probably his best game of his career, having three goal assists, with three goals plus a couple of goal assists. He was just able to pinpoint open targets easily in their attacking 50. But on the flip side, Adelaide, through their slow ball movement, just couldn't get that break, that defensive line of Geelong. And it was quite, so still lacking a lot in with terms of Adelaide's ball movement. So I really hope to see something a lot better coming from next week. Otherwise, it's not going to be a great season if they keep that sort of performance up.
No, a lot to review, the Adelaide Crows, that's for sure. So moving on to review, North Melbourne and Fremantle. I think North Melbourne, they were up by 32 points, can you believe? And I feel like with the young team that they got, obviously just got taken away from them. And I think Freo are just fantastic, by the way, that they went about it. Can you believe the Roos? I mean, they have a lot to work on. And defensively, giving up 9 consecutive goals at one stage in the game. So the Dockers, again, led by Sarong in the middle, which he's just a bull in there and he's fantastic, with 35 disposals. Just another day out for him. And Jackson with 24. Is he the best ruck in the comp? I don't know. And just adding with that as well, 2 goals, which is fantastic to see him get back to his best. So, Alan, what do you see with Fremantle North Melbourne?
Yeah, it was quite a good game to watch on the TV. North's ball movement is quite impressive, especially early on. Their clearance dominance early through, I think Powell had an amazing game. And Davey Janaki, they really got that ball moving forwards really cleanly too. They were extracting out for the forward the contest, getting nice deep entries into the forward 50. But I think to Freo's credit, their maturity now as a group to take that 30-point deficit and then change it around so quickly, sort of late in that second quarter, to put on an 11-goal then streak. So it's a testament to, I think, that younger group, especially leadership through Sarong, Brayshaw, Ryan down back was huge. But Jackson's game, I think early on, I think Cherry probably had him a little bit because his game was still very good too. But that second half from Jackson was phenomenal. And you probably won't see a better Ruckman game this year from him, from anyone, really. But it's him, that midfield now, starting to really blossom. But I suppose one thing with Freo is like, do you want to keep giving away that early leads early? That's probably only one criticism they have with them so far, but they've been very impressive so far.
Yeah, no, it was a pretty good turnaround once again, Alan, too. And Fremantle's first 2-0 start since 2015 when they made it through to the prelim final. And the whole talk about with Luke Jackson once Sean Darcy does return, I think it's within the next couple of weeks, having watched the Fremantle Dockers' latest injury report with as well. And it's more the fact that this whole, they sort of call it conundrum when Darcy does return, but I don't see it as a conundrum because last season it did take them at least a good 6-7 rounds to adjust to each other's strengths in terms of rucking and up forward with their craft. And of course, Jackson had that big breakout game against Hawthorn round 8 where he kicked those 3 goals, and the whole partnership pretty much from there really blossomed, and it gave Fremantle this whole different dynamic punch with their ruck forward structure. And I don't think that's going to hinder Fremantle's momentum one bit, because you can throw either one there for 10, 15 minutes up forward. And yes, Darcy isn't a forward. We all get that. But just within the whole structure, when you play 2 ruckmen, it almost is obvious anyway that one of them has to spend time up forward and allow the other one, whoever's dominating in the ruck, to get further ascendancy through to their midfielders. And that's the thing, though. And this is something probably to watch as well for Friday's game against Adelaide, is how much he can expose Riley O'Brien and take him deep into the forward line. I think it's going to be one thing to watch there for Adelaide, but also for Fremantle to really capitalize on and use it as their strength in terms of just adding more potency up forward there too. And I think also the Fremantle small forwards, they had an impact as well. And there was a bit of a scare there, right, with Sam Switkowski getting his ankle caught in a tackle there in the first quarter. He thought it may not be too good, but he was able to play out the rest of the game. So yeah, definitely that speed on the ball Fremantle got in from basically, what, the second half of the first half, should I say, as well, really allowed him to just put the game back on their terms. And it feels though, after North Melbourne's really impressive start, that they just sort of fatigued a little bit. And then they made just that little bit of a surge right in the third. And then, unfortunately, they just sort of ran out of petrol tickets in a way. And there was also some commentary too about North Melbourne in terms of this is a game they should have won. And yeah, you can almost make the case now that they should have won. But at the same time, they're still in this sort of rebuilding phase, right, where they still have to learn from losses such as these and apply to whoever they play, say, the next week or the week after or even the months ahead of this season.
Yes, Fremantle are looking very frightening, aren't they? I love the way they go about it. So it's going to be a very exciting year for them if they keep it on a roll. So speaking about keeping on a roll, Melbourne and Hawthorn. So obviously the D's dominated the first quarter. I feel like the Hawks tried to play more of a possession game, taking 52 uncontested marks in the first term, which, clearly backfired. Fridge with kicking 5 goals, and the midfield of Vaughan, Petrarca, Oliver, Viney, it just goes on, dominating. So it was a comfortable win for the D's. And Alan, how do you sit with it?
Yeah, it was quite a strange game with what Hawthorn decided to do with their sort of holding possession and their kick marks coming in the back line. But yeah, it was just a clinical game though for Melbourne. I mean, their midfield dominated. Unfortunately, got a couple of injuries in the back line, but it just looked like Melbourne sort of getting back to their best in a way. They're not quite there yet. There's still a few little things to tinker around, but as a whole, just performance, so they're starting to really gel, which is a good thing for them.
Yeah, just wasn't really the Hawthorn way, as Sam Mitchell said during his press conference about this kick mark game in the first quarter, and Melbourne just absolutely made them pay. But Hawthorn's tactics, though, just trying to keep ruffling Clayton Oliver, you sometimes feel as though you're crossing the line most of the time and actually just play the ball and not the man. And that was just a sort of the ongoing theme that they wanted to keep replicating throughout the game as well. There was a few bumps here and there, and he still just shrugged it off, Clayton, and did what he does best right throughout midfield and extracting clearances and getting on the end of handball chains. And yeah, just Hawthorn's whole structure going forward just didn't feel convincing. That was the one issue they had all game. And when you only kick 5 goals 8 for the entire game, you're barely winning any games unless it's absolutely pelting weather and you can't see the football. But I think for Melbourne, those only two concerns they had with Jake Lever and Stephen May, and May, of course, suffering those. What, a rib fracture as well in that incident with Mabio Chol, when Chol inadvertently landed on top of him after a one-on-one marking contest, and Lever innocuously hurting his knee going for a spoil to rush the ball through the posts. And luckily enough, though, May's only going to miss, I think it's a couple of weeks against Port Adelaide this Saturday night, and then the gather round game against Adelaide, and looks as though Lever is about clear to play against the Power, so which is good news. But Melbourne have options anyway to fill May's void. They, of course, played Harrison Petty, and the other name escapes me from the top of my head as well. They had Tom McDonald playing down back as well. So they can easily fill with those three. Because I think Marty Hall was playing, I think it's the third tall defender for the rest of the game. But because the ball wasn't hardly going in Hawthorn's forward half, it didn't really matter too much for Melbourne's reliable defence. But yeah, no, it's all positive signs for Melbourne too. Just the ball movement, what they're able to do on the overlap and spread. And even, was it late in that third quarter, the start, early in the fourth quarter? It was just an absolute Christian Petrarca masterclass, right? Him just extracting the ball through Max Gawn's hitouts and bursting through the middle, which we've seen in numerous times in his 179 game career. But that was just poultry motion at Gawn to Petrarca, sort of ruck tap to Christian, and Lambs just roam free.
Yeah, the track is back, that's for sure. I love seeing the track at his best and kicking yeah, bombs from 50, so that's always good to see. Now, moving on to the SCG, Sydney got up over Essendon, which is obviously sad for me, but I feel like the Bombers did bring the heat, the Essendon edge, as you like to say. That's been all over the news, but the Swans were just too good at the end of the day. Their ability to punish Essendon, with their turnovers, which we love to do. And yeah, the Swans' movement of the ball from the, D50 to forward 50 was just too slick. I think they're the best in the comp at the moment. So, the Bombers got a lot to work on, but yeah, the Swans were just unstoppable. So, Alan, pass it over to you.
Yeah, this was quite a good game to watch. I will say Papley's game was enormous for Sydney. I think he had about 28 touches to kick 4. I think that was, great. And Gordon as well. I think early on he was a bit slow to start with, but his second half was fantastic. I mean, that he had there was one bit of play where you could see it was like the half back pocket. He runs across the entire length of the ground, receives a handball. I think his half back flank. Passes on, continues gut running all the way to the half-forward flank, receives it again, and is able to break the 50 and kick that goal. But there's no other player in the competition who's able to have that aerobic capacity to make that play even possible, let alone actually do it. So he was huge. I mean, Heaney's having another cracker game. I mean, Essendon was able to be competitive throughout. I mean, their heat, maybe they did step a little bit too far on some occasions, but their intensity was great, and it's something they need to keep up throughout the season, because it's something that's been lacking for a number of years. And to see it actually is quite good for Essendon. But the one thing, though, is their defence, though, in terms of defending that back 50 and that ball movement, is still not there yet. I mean, Mackay's back there is able to be more of a one-on-one, but in terms of their structure, still got a bit to gel there to, improve them, to make control they actually start winning those games that they actually have a chance of doing so.
Yeah, it definitely was a great game too, Alan, and was able to watch it. 34 goals combined, and sort of the talk around the last few years about scoring and trying to get more free-flowing games. And this is what the game really lived up to, and a lot of that hype as well. And I think, yeah, just Essendon's sort of fundamental breakdowns as well really hurt them. And something that all three of us previewed last week, which was going to be a real emphasis to watch for Essendon, was defending that back half and getting back in transition, which unfortunately many times they weren't able to do against the Swans on Saturday night. But I think when you look at Sydney's whole ball movement, when they start from half back with Nick Blake and the whole slingshot footy that they're able to produce from that spot all the way to their forward line, it's just way too devastating to watch, and they'll just completely tear to shreds. And Essendon were able to do that at most stages as well during the game. They were able to get heat on the ball and get free to their targets inside 50, should I say, as well. And they shouldn't be too discouraged, I think, in the way the Bombers. But that was the problem right throughout as well. From the opening quarter, after they got off to that really good start, that Sydney were able to peg them back, and then eventually just felt as though just that whole class as well of the Swans was just way too much for Essendon to handle. And I think this is probably a good point as well for the Bombers come this Saturday against the Saints as well, because we've already spoken about, right? They've completely transformed their game in terms of playing a little bit more quicker as well and trying to really use the corridor a lot more. But yeah, if you're Essendon, yes, you lost 1-1 to start the season, but you can take some positives away from it.
Yeah, there's plenty of positives definitely to take away from that. So, but also I feel like Peter Wright probably dropped his head after that, big hit. So we saw Kyle Langford went up to him and, tried to, pump him up, but he just looked so down. And that was very, very early in the game. So, you had someone out there that was a bit down in their head. So that's obviously not good. But hopefully, yeah, I mean, Peter's back, which we'll touch on later in 4 weeks. But yeah, we'll talk about that a bit later. Moving on to the Gold Coast Suns and the Bulldogs. Yeah, what a boring game that was, I guess, if I had to summarize it. But Dimmer would definitely be disappointed with the last quarter, especially after a poor last quarter, the week before against the Crows, and letting also the Tigers come back in that opening round. So the Dogs midfield was just too good for the Suns, winning clearances by 11, which is huge, and Cody Waitman up forward kicking six, which was definitely a difference. But yeah, Cody Waitman, didn't he love it? He was doing the telephone call and everything. So, yeah, Alan, what do you say about the Bulldogs and the Suns?
I think the best two bits about this game was the Liver v. Rail battle in the midfield, which was great. He's just two absolutely contested beasts just going at it, and then you could tell both didn't want to lose to the opponents. So every clearance, every loose ball get they got, they cracked it harder every single time. So it was great to see. I mean, obviously, I think Liver probably got Rail in the end, but you can definitely tell that's Rail's crown in the future. But in terms of Waitman, he's quite an underrated small forward in this competition. As his second bag of six in his early career, there's something about him that sort of reminds me of young Nathan Brown, ex-Western Bulldogs Richmond player, where he has this bit of X factor where he probably could go a bit more into midfield in the future. But he's just able to mark aerially. He can take a hanger, can crumb well, he can lead. He's just an extremely smart footballer and skillful. So to see his game was, in a way, it's almost like he's the Doggies' best forward occasionally. Where they still have so much talent with Norton, with Jamara, but there's times where it's the Waitman show, and you should just give him the forward line. And that was pretty much what happened on the weekend.
Yeah, those clearances early, Alan, absolutely annihilated the Suns. And I think the whole, you could tell right away that Bontempelli and Liber and Treloar, who had a great game on Sunday, they were just absolutely hungry to atone for what happened the previous week against Melbourne, where they were just completely dominating contested ball. And saw early on, they kicked four goals, right, within the space of about 15 minutes. And Waitman, of course, kicked four of his six goals in that opening quarter. And yes, the ball may bounce their way most of the time, but you make your own luck in those situations. And that's what the Dogs were able to do. And especially kicking to that end where there was no breeze. That was the thing, though, in Ballarat, where the wind always plays havoc at one end of the field and another section makes scoring a lot easier. But That was something that was really evident right throughout the game as well. The Dogs and Jason Johannesson gave them plenty of runs. So did Ed Richards. I think he had about 450 meters gained. I think he also got hurt, if I'm not mistaken, as well. But hopefully he should be available to play this Sunday against West Coast at Docklands. But it's that run and drive that we normally associate with the Western Bulldogs, where they're using those handball chains, or Bontempelli's just gracefully roaming through the middle and getting onto his left peg and delivering the ball inside 50. We saw that from the Bulldogs on Sunday. And that's sort of what is unknown about this team this season is can they replicate that on a week-to-week basis or not? And yes, it's against Gold Coast, but who knows? The Suns could well finish top eight this year. But again, this is almost like bogey come this Sunday against West Coast, considering they pretty much effectively ended their finals hopes last season by 7 points on that Sunday afternoon. But it'll be really fascinating to see whether they can actually get more of that clearance dominance against the Eagles, because there's something West Coast somehow held their own in a way against the Giants, but one day feels though probably the bigger Dogs midfielders and more seasoned bodies should get the advantage on as well. But yeah, you're talking about as well of Cody Waitman, Alan, and there's something else that reminds me a bit of him in terms of other really good small forwards like a Stephen Milne or Eddie Betts back in the day. He's a pretty good overhead mark for his size. And you don't normally tend to associate that with small forwards. You, of course, normally see them just picking up the crumbs or pouncing on the ball where it falls to ground. But he has a really good set of hands and just reads the play exceptionally well. And they'll, of course, need a lot more of Waitman come this Sunday.
He is very exciting to watch. So I love, seeing him take hangers and doing all the celebrations. He loves a celebration, doesn't he? Now moving on to Port Adelaide and Richmond. So obviously, Alan, unfortunately, Tigers couldn't get up, but Port Adelaide, again, as I said before, we're just too professional. So for the Tigers and, having guys like Butters and Rosie dominating again, I mean, they're just elite, aren't they? So, the Tigers, I feel like, looked good with the footy, but defensively, just couldn't stop Port moving the ball, giving up 18 goals and, 32 scoring shots. So, Port also would need to be better defensively as well against the better sides, giving up, 92 point, against the Tigers. So, Alan, talk about your Tiger boys.
Yeah, this was quite a close game for the most part. I think Richmond, I mean, Port Adelaide dominated the first quarter quite a lot. The sort of back kicking sort of kept Richmond in it until the sort of second quarter when Richmond sort of took over. They got a bit more of that midfield dominance. They had the slingshot from the back line quite easily. So they broke through that first defence of Port because they pressed so high up and sort of left sort of Shea Bolton one out in the in the centre square. And he basically just burst from it, break the 50 and find an open target. And Richmond was able to, get on quite a big roll there and break and get the lead going to half time. But it was the game from Butters that turned it. His performance was enormous. I think he had seven clearances, 13 score involvements, I think 14 touches in that third quarter alone, plus that goal on the half time siren. That was, enormous. Plus, I think Houston, the ball movement back line again was great. They had in the Wines getting 10 clearances through there too. So in the end, the midfield just got on top and Richmond couldn't do anything about it. And when they started getting that momentum going, Port Adelaide can just stack goals on so quickly. You saw it last week against West Coast. Again, this week, they end up scoring 120 points. So their scoring potential is enormous. And Richmond was unable to contain that at any stage, which is probably the factor of where they are at the moment in terms of their, injuries, et cetera, sort of back line, but also personnel in there and being younger, but with a new game plan they're trying to adapt to. But from a Richmond's perspective, I think Baker's game was huge. His two goals in the last third quarter, right in the last minute, gave Richmond some momentum. But with Butters, could quickly change that at the start of the first quarter and kick the goal in the first minute. And then it was pretty much all over for Richmond. So I think Ports, it's a very mature win and showing that they are going to be thereabouts again this year.
Yeah, they almost let goals like a sieve in that second half, Alan. And there was quite a number of plays that Port Adelaide were able to conjure goals from their back half and starting with a few handball chains straight down the middle. And you saw about three or four Richmond players just sort of lagging behind them. And it sort of became pretty evident that Port Adelaide's run and dash that they're normally so well associated with, Ken Hinckley, just was going to cut the Tigers up. And unfortunately, that's what felt in regard to that second half and just the whole ball movement, which was so blistering from Port Adelaide. But again, to Richmond's credit, as you pointed out, Alan, too, that big goal from Liam Baker on the three-quarter time siren definitely gave them a lot of hope. But then it just almost felt as though they ran out of legs in a way, the Tigers. And yeah, that's sort of how I'll probably summarize what really eventuated in that game for mine.
Yeah, it's a lack of pressure at the moment from Richmond. I mean, we're at our peak, we're a high pressure side, but at the moment, our pressure's, I think, 18th at the moment in the competition, so it's non-existent, and that could be down to the fact of so many new players. So we had six injuries from last week coming through, but that doesn't count for effort though, and that probably wasn't there in the last quarter, especially.
Now, wrapping up round two, we have GWS and West Coast. Again, bit of a boring one, but obviously we had the Lions and the Blues with the bye. So the Giants, again, were just way too classy for the Eagles. The Eagles just ran out of legs at the end of the day. Tom Green with 34 disposals. May as well, have the 9 Brownlow votes already. And, is definitely one of my Brownlow favourites, that's for sure. But Sam Taylor, probably the best defender in the league, I believe, at the moment. His intercept possessions are incredible. So, Yuri, you were there at the game, I believe, so you could touch on West Coast and Giants.
Yes, I was, Maggie. And yeah, definitely the first quarter, West Coast wanted to move the ball a lot more quickly. And that's something they're not normally known under Adam Simpson. It's normally a kick mark game, but they just wanted to get the ball moving on at all costs. And yeah, it was pretty flashy. It was pretty fancy. But the issue ultimately was the fundamental skill errors, which hurt them. And the Giants were just able to capitalize and pounce upon West Coast's lamentable turnovers. And of course, those couple of goals late in the first quarter definitely hurt them. But Harley Reid's start to the game was, yeah, definitely had the crowd on its feet as well. That play on the left wing where he received the ball back and took a couple of bounces and ended up getting bumped over by Kieran Briggs and ended up being an advantage. And I think it ultimately led to an Eagles goal. But it's those sort of plays where West Coast fans should definitely be excited about as well with Harley. And he definitely didn't feel out of place one bit in his first home game at Optus Stadium. But come the second quarter as well, it was sort of West Coast for that period there, a 7, 8 minute period to start. They had most of the attacking territory. They just couldn't capitalize. They couldn't get reward for their dominance. And they only had one behind through Jack Waterman. And ultimately, the rest of that half was played in the Giants' forward 50, even though there were so many stoppages in that second quarter. But ultimately, those couple of goals late and that one to Toby Bedford, where he basically just picked up the crumbs and ran to the top of the goal square and punched it home into about the second row of Optus. Definitely almost felt like a deflating tie for West Coast, being down by 39 at half time. And then it just, yeah, became sort of just the GWS orange tsunami that we've grown accustomed to, right? They just ran in waves and that was pretty full on right from the opening quarter. And it just eventually West Coast, yeah, their whole fatigue eventually got to him as well. And Josh Kelly got on the receiving end of that lovely goal, which he kicked from just inside 50, and he's done that so many times throughout his career. But that fourth quarter, West Coast definitely fought it out. That was the big thing. They didn't just sort of fold into the abyss and lose by 100 points, as which they did about five occasions last season. They actually really rolled up their sleeves and gave it a good sort of fist of it. And Elliot Yeo kicked a nice goal from 55 out on the run. It was sort of flashback to Elliot Yeo of 2017, 2018, back in his prime, and definitely gave West Coast fans something to sort of cheer about in that aspect, which was good because he's had so many injuries throughout the last three, four seasons of his career. But ultimately, again, it was just class between the two teams. That's what separated it throughout the game. And the Giants tackling and having asked Adam Kingsley the question post presser too about their tackling pressure right throughout the contest. They laid 83 tackles, which was more than their first two games combined when they only had 36 and 45 tackles against Collingwood and North Melbourne, respectively. He said it was a big point of emphasis that the boys wanted to focus on this week. And you could tell right away, just watching from the media box, that they were just drilling Eagles players with basically the full force of a rugby union tackle. And yeah, it was just, yeah, the whole Giants class throughout was, yeah, something a majestic sight to behold. And they're 3-0 for the first time in their history.
Which is extremely exciting, isn't it? So I'm really excited to see how they go through the whole year. Obviously, they're going to be in the top eight, so I can't wait to see the orange tsunami, keep getting bigger. So that's going to be exciting. Now, moving on to the tribunal, we have some news for you guys. If you haven't heard, Peter Wright, obviously, unfortunately, is taking 4 weeks holiday. He might come out to Hamilton Island or something. So, but he's taken a 4 week break, obviously, with his, hit to the Sydney Swans player, and obviously King as well with his hit. So Matt, that is, yeah, Max King from St Kilda taking the hit there as well. He's just gone for a 1 week holiday. But Peter Wright, I just want to touch on quickly, if you have seen the hit or haven't, I really think that, if I look at it and I've watched it plenty of times, but you know, I play footy myself. It's very hard to pull out of a contest. You want to compete, you know, you want to put your body on the line. And Peter Wright is, you know, obviously a full forward and he's putting his body on the line. And, you know, seeing the hit, I feel like it wouldn't be 4 weeks if he put his big jukes up. So maybe next time, Peter, if you do that, put your jukes up and you might get a couple of weeks, maybe holiday. But yeah, I don't know how I sit with it. 4 weeks is very harsh. You know, is the AFL going soft? I don't know. But I, you know, that's also relying on the Sydney Swans player as well, you know, being cautious of, you know, who's behind you type of thing. So it's a bit of both ways. But yeah, Yuri, how do you sit with this one?
Yeah, just felt as though first, Maggie, that he was going for the ball. His eyes were on where the ball was heading in his direction. And in that almost the last split second or two, Harry Cunningham coming from his left-hand side comes in the way to compete for the mark as well. And then once he turns his eyes, that's where he ultimately got in trouble. And if he had of sort of, and that's the thing though with marking contests nowadays, and of course with this ongoing AFL class action in regards to concussion, is that it almost feels as though, do you almost chicken out of it? And it's not a nice word to use, but do you sort of not go for the mark and just be lambasted by a coach? That's the worry, I think, going forward, right? Because we've seen over the years, there was one play, and I wrote this down earlier today, with Jordan Lewis and Jared Harbrow. And both, and I think both of you remember this contest as well. It was round three at Docklands that year in 2010. And it happened in the middle of the ground late in the second quarter. Lewis was going for the mark. Harbrow was going full pelt speed the other way and collects him. And Lewis, you could just hear the shudder. His head just smacks into the middle of the Docklands turf. And most remarkably, he came back late in the third quarter. Of course, nowadays, he'd be substituted and serving a 12-day concussion mandatory period, right? But that was something I just wanted to bring to mind as well, because both players were competing for the ball. But in this situation, right, that's why almost, I wouldn't say draw comparison with that, but it's just another sort of example to use of a marking contest where Harbrow actually didn't get any weeks for that hit because he actually did attempt to go for the ball. But yeah, it's just, oh, it's a grey area. I think that's the word that's just been used right throughout as well with this, and one that will probably still come to terms with what players do, especially big fours such as Jeremy Cameron, Charlie Curnow, Harry Mackay, Charlie Dixon, Tom Lynch, Max King. Almost the list of the other names right there as well. And Joe Danaher there too. So, yeah, hopefully just he doesn't sort of get to this point where it almost just gets completely impeded out of the game and ends up being, oh, well, the player who's coming in from the side who's just entered the contest takes the mark and all's well and ends well. And the guy that was initially going for the mark is the one that gets berated by the coach.
Yeah, I mean, Wright had every right to contest that footy in the way he did and the manner he did. Just in the end, though, you have to make sure he's playing the ball. And that's the only mistake he sort of made, because he leaves his fist out, and as Maggie said, leaves his hands out. It looks like he's marking, get the fist in for a spoil. He'd be fine. He'd be walking away with nothing. It's just him turning, bracing that shoulder in. That's going to be the mechanism they're always going to suspend, no matter what you're actually going to do, whether it's just a bump on the ground, jump in the air. That mechanism is like, go back to Maynard last year. That Maynard incident happens again today. That mechanism is going to be suspended. So I think that's sort of where we've got to. Is it right? Maybe, maybe not. But yeah, in terms of the head, I think in the end, though, you've got to protect the head as much as anything. But it is very hard for players to think in that split second, though.
Oh, it's very hard, exactly. And that's what I said before. Playing footy myself, I know it's extremely hard to make a decision like that. So I don't know, looking back at it, 1,000 times, it does look like Peter Wright does, you know, try to protect himself, and that's what you try to do, right? So I'm not quite sure, but we will move on because I could be here all day speaking about that. But moving on to some injury news, Alan, did you want to touch on Dude from Brisbane Lions?
Yeah, this is quite a sad story. Bit like sort of give this a couple of weeks ago, have a bloke who's done the ACL last year, missed pretty much the whole season, about to come in, make his debut for a new club. Everyone's positive he's going to get named today. And then here he goes down with another ACL, the same one he's just had to repair. So he's ruptured again. I think it's just a partial rupture this time, but it's still out for the whole season, pretty much. So it's quite sad. But on the flip side, which I think is probably concerning for the AFL so far, it's the fourth ACL in 21 games so far. We're only 21 games of the season. We've already had four ACLs. Mm-hmm. I think from a conditioning, from a sports science perspective, This could be a bit alarming in terms of, are we playing the games a bit too early on harder surfaces where all of a sudden we are having higher risk with ACLs and injuries? I mean, even just going back to Richmond's perspective, we play a, have a 5-day break to start the season, which is not optimal for any team. And then all of a sudden, from our second game, we have six players who can't then push up for this next week through injuries. A couple of them are now long-term, gives because after a week, all season, have hamstrings with Prestia, a couple of players then can't then, you know, back up 1 or 2 weeks. And then you've got other injuries across the, get the board with a lot of other clubs. It's almost like you've got a smaller season because you pushed the games up too far forward. You've got the harder surfaces because we're still just coming out of summer. We not have this moisture in the ground, and that has greater wear and tear on the legs in particular. Especially in terms of landing with ACLs, so that extra force going through can cause more instability within that joint structure, which then leads to those ACL injuries. I think it's something the AFL probably has to consider, but I think the economic, you know, advantage of starting early might be too great for them. But I think for clubs, it's probably concerning to see this rate of injury rate so early in the season.
Yeah, sort of reminds of Tom Duda's latest ACL injury, Alan, of Alex Johnson, the Sydney Swans, and how many knee injuries he had to go through. And it's pretty tough one bit to say that whatsoever. And especially when you do it multiple times, as Alex did throughout his career, and having to sort of go through that rehab process and sort of be in that lonely place in a way where most of the rehab does sort of occur. And that was pretty hard because Duda was going to make his debut tomorrow night against Collingwood. That was pretty much penciled in, signed in, delivered, and ready to go. But yeah, also the other injuries, Alan. There was one to Jacob Hopper. He's out for what, the next couple of weeks as well. Just a minor clean out in his knee. And I think this has been the first time. I'm trying to think as well. The AFL season has started this early. I think 2014 was one that started early, but also 2000, the year that, of course, the Olympics were held in Sydney. The season started what, in early March, and they had one game. I think it was Carlton Brisbane, where it was sweltering 35-degree temperature at Princess Park. And we saw the same thing as well in the opening round, what, last week, right? Melbourne Western Bulldogs was, what, 30 degrees. Essendon Hawthorn was about the same temperature too. So, yeah, this whole, again, we spoke about, right, the concept of opening round, and maybe you just have to push it back that following week, or maybe even the week after, because beforehand, the AFL home and away season used to start, what, in the last week of March all those years ago.
Yeah, and it's I think the biggest issue I think is the hardness of the ground, because I mean when you think about any of the people, especially with conditioning as well, going in because the shorter season, shorter pre-season, you don't have the same conditioning. It's no matter how much you train, you can't replicate the intensity of a game, and you go into a game on a harder surface. It's just it's a recipe for injury, and it'll be interesting to see if this sort of thing continues going into the season ahead, because we know opening round's going to stay for the foreseeable future.
But also injuries like, you know, the ACL as well. You see some players, you know, it doesn't even look like a bad injury. So, yeah, ACLs are definitely a tough one. So they can just move just a slight little bit and there it is. So it's very devastating for, you know, Duda. I was really looking forward to seeing what he can do at the Gabba. So talking about the Gabba, let's talk about our preview for this coming week, round three. So we got Brisbane, Collingwood at the Gabba, as I said, Thursday night at 7:30. Make sure you tune in. It should be an absolute classic, and I'm so looking forward to it. So, Yuri.
Yeah, it should be an absolute cracker of a game. And the last couple of Easter Thursday contests have gone Brisbane's way. They won by 7 points a couple of years ago. And then last year, they won by, I think, about 33 points. And Charlie Cameron just ran rings around Collingwood's defence and kicked up pretty sure 6 goals that night. So, yeah, it's going to be one to watch out for Collingwood. And you most likely think it's going to be Quaynor anyway. He gets the matchup on Cameron, and Quaynor can play either attacking or a defensive role on him and keep him pretty close throughout as well. They've even got Braden Maynard, who they've thrown onto Cameron on multiple matchups between the teams. So those are a couple of options there. I think, of course, everyone's going to talk about Billy Frampton on how Harris Andrews, but that's not happening one bit. So, yeah, just the whole Collingwood backline structure, so on how they match up on Brisbane's forward line with Moore and Danaher, Frampton most likely play on Hipwood, and then we've already mentioned as well Quaynor on Cameron. But the other one, Lincoln McCarthy too, that's sort of, yeah, who does go into him as well? That's the interesting one, because they can play Jack Crisp down back as a half backer and more so sweeping half back. So it's another option Collingwood do have up their sleeve if they want to go down that route. But more again, it's transition for the Magpies, and getting back to where they were for the last couple of seasons is, can they stop Brisbane's lightning ball movement through to Gabba? Because when that gets absolutely rolling, and the thing is though, Brisbane, they don't need to rack up 350, 360 disposals to win, right? Because the last couple of seasons, they've been mostly bottom five for average disposals a game. All they want to do is just get the ball on with the least fewest amount of disposals into their forward half and then just clamp it there for 5 to 10 minute periods and wear opposition teams down. And so that's the thing, if you're Collingwood, you don't want to get into. But the thing is though, both teams basically play the same style, right? So it basically almost just counteracts one of the other in terms of how they want to play in terms of generating those scores right away. So it's just something to really watch out for too. And I think with the matchup with Lachie Neale was sort of, I think last year when they played at Docklands and they had Tom Mitchell tagging him as well. And that matchup sort of, no, definitely wasn't the right one because Tom Mitchell has never been a tagger in his career. He's been a ball accumulator. So don't see that matchup happening whatsoever. Maybe you see a head-to-head where both of them, of course, will generate their fair amount of disposals and try and hurt each other the other way. But yeah, no, it's really intriguing just to see what sort of matchup's going to go down there too. But I just feel as though Brisbane will just have enough firepower for mine to get the job done by a couple of kicks.
Yeah, I mean, it's this going to this game with how great the grand final was last year. You've been laughing this time last year. After the grand final, you said going to this round, they'd be winless each. It's quite, it's hard to believe, really, when you think about it. But it's going to be, I mean, the loser in this is going to be the biggest talking point coming out of it. So you both teams are going to be absolutely firing. So it should be a really good contest, but it's going to be a lot of talking points for the loser, though.
Well, 100%. So Johnny Noble going for the ins. Johnny Noble is back in, which is great to see. He's been just tearing it up in the VFL. So, but also the question mark is still Sidebottom is the question mark because he's obviously managed, but what exactly does that mean? You see, there's a lot of talk around the media saying, Pendlebury, Sidebottom, they're getting on now. It's time for the flicks. I've been seeing a lot of social media, articles about that. So that's very interesting to see. Now, moving on to North Melbourne and Carlton at Marvel, Friday at 4:20. So obviously North Melbourne, I feel like they just gotta play with absolute, try to play with as much confidence. But obviously when you have, Carlton in just the best nick that they've been in. So I think they just gotta go through the guts and just I can't see North Melbourne winning at all. But they just gotta, just get on their bikes and give it to guys like Sheasel, and they should be right. So there you go. But Alan, what do you think of this game?
I mean, this is obviously their blockbuster for the year, North Melbourne. Traditionally, they've performed very badly. It's not been a great spectacle for them for Good Friday. But this year, you think it's going to be a bit different. I mean, you don't expect them to beat Carlton. You think Carlton's going to be far too strong for them. But you know they're going to play a good brand of football, as showcased the last few weeks, where they've actually taken up to both GWS and Freo at times where they have shown their electric ball movement. So you know you're going to get a good brand of football, and as well as you get to see, Charlie Kerno tear it up on the big time. So it's going to be a good game to watch, but especially for a North supporter though, you're probably actually going to short look forward to this and see what actual future you have. How they're actually going to perform on one of their actual
Yes.
marquee games. But it's going to be quite a good game though.
Last year's game between the two teams on Good Friday was pretty close for 2.5 quarters until the Blues were able to career away to about 46-point lead, and then the Roos were able to peak them back and ultimately end up losing by 23 points. But I think we saw in that game, saw some North Melbourne's ball movement, which caught us out the back. I think that's an area that I'd be a little bit concerned about too. And even though it was 12 months ago, but it's definitely something that the Blues have managed to arrest right since the second half of last season. Jacob Wiedering comes back as well from that calf injury. That's a big in. So he'll get the task on Nick Larkin. Of course, they'll alleviate the pressure. Whoever comes out between Lewis Young or Brody Kemp, I think most likely be Young who'll be out of the side. But yeah, if you're North Melbourne too, as well, the whole slingshot through the middle, which has been something that, especially, yeah, the Giants game was something that was really on show. And then last week in that first half against Fremantle, they didn't lose any fans whatsoever. And maybe that could well be their thing, though, against the Blues. And this is something, even as a Carlton fan, I'm concerned about because in our midfield, we don't possess tremendous leg speed. When you think about, right, Cripps, Chera, Hewitt, Akers is quick, but he's not sort of electrifying quick in a way, too. We can play Matt Cotter on the wing, and yeah, he's super quick. So that's just a little bit of a concern I have there, too, if North are able to win their fair share of contested ball and clearances through there as well, especially the whole youthful vigour that they've got there, right, with George Wardlaw there and also Cobb with McKercher there in his first season. So, yeah, definitely something that would be pretty on high alert for in that aspect. But there comes to the backline as well for North Melbourne with mature age Toby Pink there and having a go up against Charlie Curnow and Harry Mackay, and those two just absolutely tore it apart right in that second half last season. And if you're North Melbourne, you don't see the ball going in there 60 or 65 times with sheer efficiency. So that's going to be something to really watch out for if you're the Kangaroos, if you can at least not have the ball being swamped in your forward half every single time and allow your defenders a good amount of respite, then it'll definitely hold them in the game for a long period. And I'll definitely see the game going deep into probably, I don't know, say the first three quarters of the game before the Blues have enough class around the field to get the job done.
Well, moving over to Optus Stadium, Friday night, 7:30. Should be an absolute cracker. I'm actually really looking forward to this game. Obviously, Fremantle are 2-0. And guess what the Crows are? 0-2. So it should be an absolute cracker. I'm really looking forward to seeing how the Crows respond, really. So, but I just think that Fremantle are going to be way too good on their deck. Obviously, with the stadium they've got over there, it's incredible, and all their fans. So it should be a fantastic game. I'm very looking forward to it. But I think Fremantle are just going to cut them and slice them through the middle with guys like Caleb Sarong. I think even Nat Fyfe himself, you know, he's playing some really good footy. And I think I reckon Jai Amos is someone that might just kick maybe a bag. So I think he's ready to explode. I said that a few episodes ago. So I'm looking forward to this game. And Alan, how do you sit with it?
Yeah, this game's going to, I think, be a very good litmus test of both of these sides. Obviously, going last year, the biggest weakness Adelaide had was travelling. They could never get the wins on the board. If they want to push for the eight, they need to get, you know, a good number of wins away from Adelaide Oval, especially seeing they lost last week against Geelong at home. They need to really bounce back. The Freo's, you know, maturity they've had growing, you know, you can start to see it really coming to fruition. And you touched on it, Yuri. I think seeing what Jackson can then do with Riley O'Brien, see if he can then, you know, stretch him forward. I think that's going to be one of the key matchups to watch. But also the head-to-head battle between sort of Dawson and Sarong, Brayshaw with Laird, is going to be another good thing to watch. But you expect Freo at home, they should be too strong. But you would hope that Adelaide are going to be a bit more bold with their ball movement and really take it up to them.
Yeah, it's going to be a big thing too, especially both sides and their small forwards. That's the real captivating part to this game with Michael Frederick, Sam Sulkowski, Tom Emmett down there, and Michael Walters, the seasoned veteran, and whereas for Adelaide with Isaac Rankin there too, and how much of an impact can he have as well to really get off the chain? That's going to be a big part because Rankin's really all about confidence, and when he gets his tail up, he's really hard to stop. But with Fremantle's small forwards, right, this is the thing though, they don't have to impact in terms of combining for 7-8 goals a game. It's always a bonus if they do because it always is so beneficial, but it's their whole perceived forward pressure and tackling is what drives Fremantle's forward half game. If they're able to retain the ball inside their 50 with that sheer amount of tackling, then going to be seeing it really hard for Adelaide's backline, which has always sort of just been that one area where it sort of can get shaky, right? And that's the thing to watch out for is that one-on-one matchup. We've, I'm pretty sure Jordan Butts against Jai Amos most likely be the matchup this Friday evening and see how that sort of pans down. But I think with Adelaide's midfield, they're not blessed with leg speed. And we spoke about that, right, with Carlton's midfield. They're sort of run on the same dimension of autopilot, if you want to use that term, with Rory Laird there and Matt Crouch and Jordan Dawson too. But that's where you see Sarong, Brayshaw, and Brayshaw's pretty good at bursting out in terms of just extracting clearances. And Sarong, of course, we saw a couple of weeks ago, tear the Brisbane Lions midfield apart, minus Lachie Neal. But yeah, it's going to be really captivating to see how it all plays out. But just, yeah, it sort of feels line ball in a way in this game too. But just feels though the whole confidence Fremantle's been riding the first 2 weeks of this season should carry them over the line.
Yeah, it should be a cracker. I'm very looking forward to it. So talking about a cracker, Essendon and St Kilda. I'm very looking forward to this game. I don't know. It's going to be a tough one because I think St Kilda, I love the way they played against Collingwood, right? So the way they move the ball off half back, you know, I feel like Essendon are very slow, you know, with their, you know, ball movement coming off half back. And their skill execution, you know, isn't quite up there. So I'm very looking forward to this one. But, yeah, St Kilda, I think, going to be too classy with their foot skills. And obviously, Wanganing Miller as well, coming off halfback. He's going to dominate again. But Essendon should shut him down. But, again, you can't shut down everyone. So, but he's definitely on the watch list, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think under the roof of Docklands too, and it's something that St Kilda has always been pretty good over the years in terms of just the whole slingshot ball movement. And I think we've seen over a number of years as well between the two teams, and may even sort of dive down the wormhole a little bit back to 2009, where there was that classic game between the two teams. And yeah, still remember this, Nick Riewoldt missed the winning kick after the siren. And that's just one game that comes to mind. Whether we do get that type of game or not, well, we'll soon find out from the opening bounce. But it's just sort of the thing, though, with I think St Kilda's backline is super hard to penetrate with Callum Wilkie there down back, just marshalling the troops, and when he can add Jack Sinclair through halfback. But also, what St Kilda did last season, that they've sort of had this real flexible option, is playing Sinclair through to midfield. And we saw that against Sydney last season, where he just tore them apart and ultimately end up giving St Kilda a win because of that one magnet move that Ross Lyon made. So that's one thing that I think Essendon will have to be on sort of really cautious alert for, right? If they want to stop this whole St Kilda run and chain and what we've seen through, especially last Thursday night against Collingwood. But if you're the Bombers as well, you can almost just fight fire with fire because they can do exactly the same thing as well. But it's going to come down to channeling that aggression for them from what we saw against Sydney, and whether they can keep replicating that for the full 120 minutes of the game against Ross Lyon's sides, where they're known for just dowing you down to the ground bit by bit. And that's what St Kilda will do. They can just easily put a plus one in there if they want to anyway, and any advance one bit. And that's the concern for Essendon when the game's not on their terms, when they're not getting the whole sort of slingshot footy that they're well accustomed to doing, then that's going to fit St Kilda to a team. Whether they play sort of 20 to 25 minutes or just, oh, we'll just stick the ball in one end of the ground and just have ball up after ball up and allow the game to just meander by, well, that'll suit the Saints one bit.
Yeah, I think the thing about St Kilda is they pressure so hard across the entirety of the ground that for any opposition, they just force them to have to live in it, and they have to live for the whole game. And that's always been the biggest issue with sort of Essendon. It's like they can be there, they can handle it for periods of time, but they can't handle it for the full 4 quarters. And that's what they need to do against St Kilda, because no matter what St Kilda does, they might not have the most talented side, they might not have the best, names across the entire board, but their entire game plan just forces the opposition to play a certain way now, that it sort of just keeps them in the game no matter what. Then a little bit of talent through Wang Lee Malira and their ball moving off the half back line, that slingshot can break through that line and get the goals. But this game is going to be quick, I think, especially on marble between Essendon and St Kilda, so it's going to be fun to watch. But we'll see how well Essendon can bring the heat and then maintain that intensity within that St Kilda pressure. I think that's going to be the biggest, thing to tell how close they'll go.
I mean, hopefully we get up, but anyways, moving on to Port Adelaide and Melbourne. I mean, battle the midfields, right? You've got Butters and Rosie and Petrarca, Oliver, Vine. It just goes on, right? So I'm very looking forward to this one. It'll be a very contested game, I think. It'll be very contested, ball up after ball up, I reckon. And definitely Petrarca, I reckon he'll kick one from 50. So I'm manifesting that, but it should be a great game. I think guys like even Ivan Soto as well. I feel like he's playing some really great footy. But across the board, I think they're playing just incredible footy, Port Adelaide, and I love the way they go about it. But again, Melbourne just have that, bullish midfield. So it's going to be very hard to stop on both ends. So it's defensive pressure for both teams and see how they pull up. But Yuri, talk us through Port Adelaide and Melbourne.
Saw last season, right, Maggie, that pretty much it was almost the game which everyone took notice of Zach Butters, that Friday night, which Port Adelaide won by 4 points. He had 41 disposals, got the three Brownlow votes, pretty sure, and it was pretty sort of slippery conditions that night too, and he really excelled in the cold face. And I think that's what we're going to see, even though the conditions aren't going to be so damp and slippery, and it's going to be more an open field. I think sort of with Port Adelaide's forward line, with having, of course, Charlie Dixon there, Todd Marshall too, is how much can they Port Adelaide generate those inside 50s? Because generating them hasn't been an issue, but the problem is if they bomb the ball up and allow Lever to be third man up and intercept all the time, that may be an issue that Port Adelaide will have to address. But I don't see for Melbourne in terms of the whole, well, yeah, Stephen Mayne's loss is big. Okay, we can say that for a couple of weeks. But with Adam Tomlinson, you think most likely will come into the team, and he's always been a pretty dependable defender, does his job week in, week out, and doesn't sort of really get overawed by the pressure, then that's always a good fit as well to complement with Lever and having, of course, most likely Tom McDonald and sticking Harrison Petty playing his usual forward role. But also for Melbourne too, Tom Sparrow's a name that sort of goes under the radar a fair bit these last couple of seasons, and what he's able to do to take the pressure off Jack Viney, Christian Petrarca, Clayton Oliver. He's another real inside midfielder, but he can also get it on the outside and be a real damaging force too by foot. So that's one of your Port Adelaide to look out for too, because he can sneakily get 25 disposals and no one really pays too much attention to him. But that's where sort of I think we've up fought as well for Port Adelaide. And of course, they're still missing Sam Powell-Pepper, who's, I think this is the last week or the second last week of his four-game suspension, which he occurred during that nap during the community series practice game against Adelaide. So they'll definitely miss him in that part as well. But I think Blake Howes has really stepped up well for Melbourne, has been a sort of medium-ish defender, and they've really fitted those young guys within the whole back six just almost to a T, Melbourne. With Judd McVeigh's second season, he hasn't really missed a beat. And, of course, Jake Bowie's still out for, what, another 5 weeks, that AC joint injury. But they're going along smoothly, Melbourne, at the moment too. And then up forward, it's always those questions about delivering inside 50 properly, just hitting those simple targets, and the whole matchup on Bailey Fritch and who does go on to him, whether it's Brandon Zerk-Thatcher, is it Asava Radigali? I think most likely Radigali will get the job on Ben Brown, and whether it's the other option they do have there as well, maybe a Ryan Burton, perhaps. It's always an interesting one to sort of figure out.
Yeah, and I think one thing with Port Adelaide too is their midfield depth. I think Willem Drew had a great game against Richmond, and the versatility he has too, because he can go be a tagger. So he's always tagged, I think, Taranto in the first half, and he can always go and clamp down on an Oliver, on a Petrarca, which is, I think, one of the assets that Henningley has. And he can then just put in, but on his own, he can just still rack up 30 touches. I think it's going to be a really good game, but you still think that Port at home should be too strong. But this was the game, as you said, that Butters really broke out and made people notice just how good he is. And you would think he's going to back it up this week.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch. It'll be battle of the midfields, that's for sure. Moving over to the Western Bulldogs and West Coast Eagles at Marvel Sunday at 1 p.m. Now, this one's going to be interesting. I mean, Western Bulldogs are going to be, again, way too strong, I think. So, I think Adam Treloar's having a really fantastic year so far. I love the way that he's going about it. Obviously, the Bont is obviously just doing what he does best, and Libra in there, and JJ as well. But it would just be interesting to see, if West Coast, I feel like they did play good patches of footy last week, little patches, but, they're at Marvel now, smaller ground. So I want to see them really take the game on, give it to Harley Reid. He'll fend off a few players and there you go. But I really hope that, West Coast just find a bit of confidence from last week. You can still pick out some positives. It's the Craig McCraig mentality. You pick out the 80% positives and the 20% negatives. Because I think there was some passages of play last week for the West Coast Eagles they can take out and, really improve on. So I'm looking forward to this one a little bit, but I think the Western Bulldogs will definitely take away with probably a 50-point win. So, Yuri, how do you sit with this one?
Well, if you're the Western Bulldogs and you look back to last season, you're probably not thinking an 8-goal margin for the time being just because of what happened right when the Eagles won by 7 points. But for West Coast, and Adam Simpson said in his post-match presser that it's about sustaining pressure for longer periods of time, and they weren't able to do that efficiently. So they laid 21st quarter tackles, which is exceptional. But after that was just they sort of meandered a little bit and sort of that pressure waned in and out of the contest. So if you do that against the Bulldogs and what they're able to do from the middle and extracting the clearances, then it's going to be a long day. But I think they're going to be competitive. I just feel that way for whether it's a half, and most likely a half, and then I think the Bulldogs will get the ascendancy on top there too. But also down back, I don't know why. It just feels though McGovern always holds his own. Duggan was, really solid, even through the amount of barrage that the Giants had with their inside 50 entries with 67 for the game. He could hold his head up high in that contest too. And whether he does go on to Cody Waitman, that's going to be a pretty interesting part of the contest to really find out. Most likely Brody Hoff, actually. Brody Hoff's had a really good start to the season. And even I think the back half of last season, he just went under the radar with a lot of sort of people within the AFL landscape too, because last week he held Toby Green, the Giants skipper, to just a goal. So that's also another matchup that the Eagles can go for, playing him on Cody Waitman too. Last week the Bulldogs brought back Sam Darcy, and I think Dogs fans are pretty happy with that anyway too, because he has that flexibility of playing down back or pinching in the ruck or playing as that forward. So, but just those Bulldogs season midfielders, right, that's going to be the real telling part too. And then off the outside of halfback there with Bailey Dale and Jason Johansson, should I say, just doing their thing and just racking up the meters gain. I think it's going to be a bit of a long slog if West Coast aren't able to maintain the pressure for a long time.
Yeah, I think the one thing for Bulldogs too, like the one thing they did really well last week against Gold Coast was they recorded 27 intercept marks, which is the most they've had in like 20 years. And that's always been an element of the game they've had lacking. Now, was that partly because they were at Ballarat where it's conducive to sort of that intercept marking game? But they can bring that element into their game against the West Coast. It's going to be a really good, you know, an extra wood to have because they know they're a dominant midfield, but they have their half-back intercept mark game. And all of a sudden, they have a, you know, have a two-play wood where they can just like, don't have to rely on their midfield to win games, where they can then switch back to their half-back game. So it'll be interesting to see if they can actually do it, but going to see Harley Reid back in, down in Melbourne for the first time, so which should be good.
Yeah, he's in the paper everywhere still, so which you'll see, Yuri, everywhere. So every coffee that you get, you'll see him in the paper. There you go. So, Alan, I know you're very excited for this one. Richmond and Sydney at the MCG. It is very hard to beat Richmond at the MCG, but Sydney are just going to be way too strong, in my opinion. Guys with like Isaac Heaney just absolutely, you know, shredding teams to bits. You know, Warner as well. You know, people like Blakey, Nick Blakey is just playing fantastic this season, isn't he? So off halfback, the Lizard, and Sydney are just going to be way too strong. So they're going to, I think, cut Richmond through the middle, really use that corridor. And, you know, there's going to be guys on the end of it. So, yeah, Alan, you're going to run through your Tigers boys.
This is Richmond Sydney is always an interesting game because I always feel like, especially for the last sort of 5-6 years, whenever Richmond's expected to win, we sort of lose to Sydney. And whenever Sydney expected to win, we sort of win. It's been quite crazy. Then go back to like 2016 when we got that big run, that final game. We had to win to get into the finals. We win this right at the last minute thanks to Dusty. But there's always been a good contest between the two. But I think you go into this one, though, from a Richmond's point, you're just thinking they're a form team in the competition. And we're injury-riddled, new game plan. And we just like, there's only so much we can do. We've been proud in a way to stay in against contests so far. And that's probably all we can expect for the time being. But you are some things you're sort of hoping to look forward to. It's like, hopefully we get to see Kane McAuliffe make his debut this week. He's been dominating the VFL. Make his hope as a young draftee from last year. He's been going really well. I remember seeing him kick one VFL goal from 50 on the boundary. It's just like, he got skill to be able to perform that. So you want to see him get blooded in. But you think with Sydney's class that with their ball movement with Blakey, with Goulton, that our defence won't be able to contain it. We'll be able to contain it for parts of the game, but by the end of it, they'll just overrun us.
It was about 3 years ago, Alan, where Sydney announced themselves, I think, to the competition once more, that whole young upcoming midfield when they beat the Tigers in round three, coincidentally, at the MCG on that Saturday afternoon. And obviously, it was, again, full vice versa 3 years later. But that's going to be just the other concern for Richmond, right? Jacob Hopper, as we've mentioned, been out for the next couple of weeks and sort of that minusing of midfield depth too. Even though Jack Ross was arguably had his career best game last week against Port Adelaide too, the 26 disposals, but sort of shouldering the amount of responsibility there, whether they throw Dusty in for more duration into the middle, well, that's something they'll sort of see as the game goes on from the opening bounce. But yeah, the whole slingshot with Sydney right from the half back, if you're Richmond and turn the ball over in terms of shallow entries inside your 50, then just get ready to be absolutely picked apart because Port Adelaide did that exact same thing in the second half and left Dylan Grimes, left Nick Vlossen, left Nathan Broad scrambling in sixes and sevens. And even for experienced premiership players such as those three, it's still hard to stop. And that's the other thing, though, with Sydney as well. Logan McDonald, who was really impressive too last week. And yeah, just the whole... I don't think they have to really rely on anyone, though, Sydney. That's the thing, though, in the first... what, 2-3 rounds this season where they've just had these even spread of goal kickers, right? And they can float the magnets around by putting Isaac Heaney up forward. They can do all different kinds of matchups, and which is always just going to play to advantage. And yeah, it's just seemed very difficult for the Tigers to really make any headway and try and, well, they'll be competitive at least like they were against Port Adelaide, but ultimately just the whole Sydney machine, right, just be too much for them.
100% agree with that, Yuri. And to wrap things up, we've got Hawthorn and Geelong at the MCG Monday 3:20. It's going to be a day for the forwards, I believe. Guys like Hawkins, Tommy Hawkins, and even the Wizard, I think, on both ends are going to be really interesting to see. Even guys like Brad Close, and Dempsey. Dempsey's playing fantastic, so it's great to see him, running around and running loops around guys, which is fantastic. But it's a day for the forwards. I think they'll be, my prediction, I reckon the Tomahawk, he's ready to kick a bag. I think the Wizard is ready to kick a few. So it's going to be a really fun day, obviously, a Monday. Obviously, we've got Easter, so it's going to be a great game. And Yuri, you want to touch on this one?
Well, we better hope it's not the result that occurred last Easter Monday, only 12 months ago, where Hawthorn were competitive and then Geelong just absolutely drubbed them in the third quarter, ended up being an absolute annihilation. But it's Tom Hawkins' 350th game too, and it's just been an absolutely one hell of a career, right? From where he first started back in 2007 and really stamped himself in the game in that final series back in 2011. He's just gone leaps and bounds ever since. And I think for Hawthorn, though, that's going to be It's always going to be a worry every game for them this season. Their backline minus James Blake for the whole season, that torn ACL, and leaving up to James Sicily to sort of really carry the mantle there down back. But yeah, Hawthorn's just got to be a lot more better, I think, in terms of just those centre clearances and clearances as a whole, right, against Geelong. Even though we're still figuring out the Cats through the first two games this season and what they're able to replicate, I think, for this whole season, that's just going to be one to sort of watch out for too. And yeah, they can't really fall back, though, the Hawks, to what Adelaide did last week with Tom Stewart and just haphazardly bombing the ball inside their forward 50, because they do have options there, though, the Hawks. With Mabio Choel there, Mitch Lewis there, and those two are able to hit the scoreboard early, then Hawthorn feels though they'll be in the game too. But within the midfield as well, Jai Newcombe there. I'll say throw Josh Weddle, should I say, if they want to, but he predominantly plays off half back. So there's options there too, James Warple. So in terms of midfield, I don't think they should be too sort of battered in terms of their contested possession, but it's something they've got to get on top of early if they want to make this game really close.
Yeah, and then also how they're going to curtail the influence of Tom Stewart. I mean, he was massive against Adelaide last week. And yeah, I mean, you got Mitch Lewis up forward, but apart from that, there's not a lot of weapons that you can sort of say that, you know, you can make sure make Tom Stewart accountable. So, I mean, I think it's going to be a pretty long game for Hawthorn, unfortunately, but it's still a good game for, should expect a big crowd, hopefully, for that big game. But Geelong should be too strong and powering forward to a nice 3-0 start.
Yeah, it should be a fantastic day, that's for sure, on the Monday. But that's all we've got, guys. So thank you so much for joining me once again, Alan and Yuri. Thank you so much to joining in to Mojo Sports Network AFL show. Also, join our Instagram pages as well and all social media platforms, Mojo Sports Network. And we do have polls on there as well each week. So we're going to be going through those and discussing those. So thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week.